Does America face a new energy crisis, which in effect is a man-made energy crisis based on fighting for the Green New Deal, fighting against climate change? We're going to talk about that right now with Greg Wrightstone, author of the classic book now, An Inconvenient Truth. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Greg, thanks so much for joining us again on this program.
Good to be back on with you. Yeah, a lot of bad things coming out of D.C. right now, that's for sure.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's begin with, are we facing a new energy crisis? I mean, what happened recently with the oil pipeline?
Yeah, with this Colonial Pipeline, of course, the Russians, it appears, that shut it down, and it led to the gasoline shortages. I just came up from Arlington, Virginia, where it was one of the worst hit areas. D.C. was almost completely out of gasoline. As soon as I heard about it, I went and filled up immediately because I had to drive to, I had a 4-hour drive to Pittsburgh. I didn't want to get stuck. But no, it's, that's just, that we will recover from this. More significantly are the long-term impacts of what the Biden administration is doing. And they did it on day one, didn't they, with the canceling of the XL pipeline and forcing that oil to be either shipped by truck, more likely by train. And Jennifer Granholm of the Biden administration actually just last week confirmed that pipelines are the preferable route to ship these type of things, flammable liquids. I don't expect them to go back and revisit the shutting of the XL pipeline down, but that's just, these are one thing compounded on the other. The XL pipeline, they've announced that they're not going to allow any fracking on federal lands. They've shut down oil and gas leasing on federal properties. Now that won't affect the big fracking industry that we see across the United States, because almost all of that is on privately held properties. But it will affect the Gulf of Mexico, which is entirely federally controlled. And in fact, that produces, I believe, around 10% of the nation's oil production comes out of the Gulf Coast. Donald Trump proposed opening up the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, or the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska. That's going to be shut down.
Well, what is it that they have against pipelines, or is it really ultimately they're opposed to oil, the continual use of fossil fuels and oils?
Yeah, that's it. They thought by shutting that down, they would be able to stifle the Canadian tar sands development. And it's not. That oil is going to be developed. It's going to be produced, and it'll be either shipped somehow to market, either down through the United States or across to Asia from the west coast of Canada. One way or the other, it's going to go to market.
Okay, so what is it that the Biden administration has against pipelines per se?
I don't think it's the pipelines that they're against. It's because we're gonna basically have the same problem, have some of the same issues with right-of-ways and things like that that a pipeline would. But they don't seem to have a problem with that. But I think they want to shut the pipelines down to hinder oil and natural gas development. We see it here in the eastern United States. I'm sitting right now, again, in Pittsburgh, on top of the largest natural gas reservoir in the world by far. And it's really been hindered successfully by Governor Cuomo in New York shutting down any pipelines to allow natural gas production to be piped up to the northeast of New England where they really need it. They're importing expensive liquefied LNG, liquefied natural gas, a lot of that coming from Spain and around the world, Algeria, and they're buying it from people that aren't necessarily our friends instead of buying it from the God-fearing people of Pennsylvania, and there's not enough pipelines to get the gas to market here.
Huh. Well, basically, would you say that all of this is predicated on some false theories and some false understandings about, you know, the problem of man-made global warming. Is that what you would say? I mean, a catastrophic man-made global warming.
Yeah, absolutely. They're targeting CO2 as this demon molecule that's going to lead to catastrophic, excessive warming that will lead to catastrophic consequences. We at the CO2 Coalition disagree strongly with this. In fact, I just wrote for Earth Day, I wrote a hard-hitting 800-word commentary for the Washington Times titled, "There is love CO2, and so should you." And it was just last week, the Washington Times, it was pulled down from Facebook. It was labeled false and misleading. Group feedback. And I'm just in the middle of finishing up an extensive, about 25-page rebuttal to their rebuttal. And I've enlisted some of the top climate scientists in the world, members of the CO2 Coalition, to have their input and pushing back on what this group from Climate Feedback said. We've got Dr. William Happer from Princeton, Dr. Patrick Michaels, renowned climatologist. We brought in, they had described how the reefs and the Great Barrier Reef and the oceans were being degraded. I used Peter Ridd from Australia, well-known reef specialist, that added his learned opinion on this. We're going to have that, and I'll have another commentary in the Washington Times coming up hopefully later this week. We're not going to sit back, and we're going to push back against this cancel culture.
So what is the heart of the controversy? You saying CO2 is actually good for the planet, and they're saying, no, it's bad. Is that right? I mean, in a nutshell.
Yes. Yeah, because it's called the social cost of carbon. And the social cost, that is, what's the harmful effects? They only look at the harm and not the good. We see, and it's documented by NASA and others, is this tremendous greening of the planet, increase in vegetation. And it's an increase in vegetation by every niche, every environmental niche of the Earth. I guess maybe with the exception of Antarctica are benefiting from this advance and increase. We see a modest increase in warmth and temperature combined with increasing CO2 is leading to an Earth and its ecosystems that are thriving and prospering, and humanity's benefiting. And by almost every metric, we see that. And they don't like it when I say that. And they need to push back.
Do you think we could see gasoline become as expensive as, let's say, $7 a barrel? I mean, or $7 a gallon?
It would certainly. That's within the realm of possibility for sure. We've seen how much it's risen just over the last several months, really since the Biden administration was inaugurated. And then you add to that the scarcity of oil that's intentional. There's strong effort to put a carbon tax on that. It's certainly possible to see a doubling of gasoline prices.
Okay, now someone like AOC, she said just a couple of years ago that we only have 12 years to turn things around, or we're toast. The planet is over. And you know, one thing I've got to say this: I'm sure you've seen those articles. Maybe you've even written some like it, where it says this is what the environmentalists predicted. And you know, in the 70s, blah 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 blah, in the 80s, blah 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 blah, in the 90s, blah blah blah, and then none of these things come true. But because the media is so slanted, they never hold that other side, the climate change alarmists, accountable, unfortunately. But what are your thoughts about the idea of AOC saying, hey, we only have 12 years to live? And she said that, by the way, in early 2019.
Yeah, I think what she meant to say was we have 12 years before I have to revise my forecast. One of my favorite quotes is from Yogi Berra. He said, making predictions is really tough, especially about the future. And You know, they haven't gotten it. They found out how tough it is because you're right. They haven't gotten any of it right. And they're not going to in this case. We've seen, actually, it's really interesting. We've seen a lot of cooling over the last several months worldwide. Some of the most recent temperatures in the worldwide temperature measurements have shown significant cooling. And with that, I'm not saying we're going into the next ice age or even a little ice age, but it makes you wonder, number one, we are going to start cooling at some point in the future. It's going to happen. And we know that historically that's led to devastating consequences for the Earth and humanity. Each one of the cooling with crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. And it was the warm periods. Like they're trying to scare us of, oh my goodness, can't let it get another 2 degrees warmer. But yet if we look at human history and Earth's history and what happened during those times when it was that much warmer, we find that humanity prospered greatly. And we're seeing the same thing now with modest warming. And bear in mind too, think about this. They're warning against a degree and a half or 2 degrees of temperature rise. Well, we see that on a daily basis, don't we, between noon and 2 p.m. And we're supposed to be scared of that? No. We need to welcome the warmth and fear the cold.
It seems to me that the party in charge now is spending money we don't even have to fight a theory that's not even valid and that might even bankrupt the country.
Oh, it is. They're talking about spending trillions of dollars. And if we look at it, why are they spending it? There is no climate crisis. There is no climate emergency. I would argue that spending $1 to combat a non-existent problem is $1 too many. How many jobs lost is that worth? I'd say none, zero. If we're looking at this next, the bill they're planning now, trillions of more dollars, much of it devoted to control the uncontrollable, that is the Earth's temperature, because the CO2 is not the control knob of the atmospheric temperature.
Okay, so getting back to the whole issue of energy crisis, could we be seeing a type of scenario where it would be very hard to get gas in the local gas station, kind of like the gas lines we experienced in the 1970s?
Well, I don't think that's – it would be down the road. Of course, they want us all to go to electric cars, don't they? They want us to go to electric cars and get rid of your SUV, your pickup truck. Well, it'd be okay if it was an electric SUV and an electric pickup truck. One of the big problems with this converting to electricity and all electricity, that means no more heating your home with natural gas, no more using natural gas to cook with in your kitchen. This is all going to be electric and electric panels to heat your home. But one of the big problems they have with this are the large amount of increase in the rare earth elements and things like cobalt and lithium that are required for batteries and solar panels. The IEA just reported last week an extensive report on this, and they were saying that the minimum, they had listed seven of these elements and minerals that were needed. The minimum was a 700% increase that would be required over what's being produced today. And the other was, I believe it was 7,400% increase over what's being produced today.
So these kind of
there's
costs.
There's just no way we can do it.
Yeah, and these costs would go through the roof then, just to get the same basic services, we'd be paying far more money.
And the worst part of this is 80% of these minerals are processed in China. Now, the cobalt, most of it's mined in the Congo, but then transported to China for processing. And the bad news about the cobalt is they use underage boys to do a lot of the mining in the Congo. So we're using forced child labor to do some of this for you to be driving your electric car and for the battery that's in it.
Wow. Well, we're basically out of time, but we'll post to your article on this. Thank you so much for being with us. What's your website, inconvenientfacts.xyz?
It is that, and also CO2coalition.org.
Okay, Greg Wrightstone, thanks again. All the best.